Hey guys, welcome to episode 7 of the Game Train podcast. It's Carl here and I've got Callan with me right here.
Hello.
And we've got quite a jam-packed episode this time round. So let's get right into it with the news. Red Dead Redemption 2 has been delayed until 2018, which came to no one's surprise. But they released some screenshots, which we did post on our Facebook, and they look incredible.
I like the train picture, personally.
Yeah. I wonder why. I guess we're a bit biased, but yeah.
More Assassin's Creed Origin leaks, this time on merchandise. It leaked the logo, and it looks like the protagonist as well. We're uploading them onto the Facebook page as well, so everyone can have a look. So, judging from the logo, it looks definitely like it's set in Egypt, with the hieroglyphics on that.
GTA Online is still getting updates. Gun Running coming out this month. Looks pretty interesting.
Monster Hunter XX is coming to the Switch. It's coming out in August in Japan, but the Western release hasn't been announced as of yet.
Netflix have announced a TV show based on the Witcher, popular Witcher series, which looks pretty exciting.
A heap of Far Cry 5 information has come out. A trailer dropped, which we linked on the page the other week.
One of
the trailers, set in Montana in present day, comes out in February next year.
Oh, and it's fully co-op.
Yeah, and it's fully co-op, which is cool.
The anniversary event of Overwatch is running right now. Which was started in May 23rd and runs till June 12th. And there's an event checklist. And I really, really want the Genji skin. That's very important news.
For PC users, Destiny 2 will be running through Blizzard's Battle.net, which is the first time a game outside of something that Blizzard's created is running off their Battle.net. So that's kind of huge.
And we've seen some screenshots from the presentation of the Mario Rabbids Kingdom Battle game, which is probably the worst kept secret in gaming.
I'm so excited for this game. I want to do this as a feature game.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it. Mario with a gun. I mean, let's see what that looks like.
The Castlevania anime is coming out on Netflix in July. A trailer's dropped for that, and that will be out in July.
Nice. Netflix with the goods.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And that's news.
All right. So before we jump into our massive double review section this time, let's do some E3 predictions real quick, seeing as it's all dropping next week.
The week after next.
Seeing as it's all dropping the week after next.
Yeah, we're just going to have a bit of fun here. Just throw out some maybe wish lists or ideas of predictions that may or may not happen. So this isn't news. This is just us having a bit of fun with it all.
Yeah,
all
right. What's your first prediction?
EA to announce Skate 4.
Nice. Oh, that'd be nice.
That's top of the wish list, actually. I don't see it happening, but oh, man. It feels like it's time for it. It's been so long since Skate 3, and look, it would be huge if they did, but there's been... EA came out at the start of the year and said they're not making anything to do with Skate 4 because there was a huge rumor going around, but, you know.
I mean, now would be so good because, especially to rub it in the face of Tony Hawk's 5, which came back, which everyone just expected, and I don't know, I feel like people want Skate 4. They wanted Tony Hawk 5, just not the Tony Hawk 5 they got.
Yep. Anyway, we'll see what happens with that.
Nice. All right. One of mine is I think they're going to... We haven't seen any of it, and the fact that Spider-Man is like hasn't been mentioned and will, you know, it's probably like still well in the works and long time to go, but I don't know if Spider-Man's quite as important as a game to have people wait this long. I think they're confidence is in keeping the information from us, and I have this weird feeling that they're going to just show a lot of it at E3 instead of, you know, the fact that it's still in development, or I think it's a lot further on than they're letting on, and I have a feeling they're going to just show it at E3 and then release it like a month later to tie in close to the movie release, even though there's separate stories and all that. But I have a feeling they're going to do a similar Fallout 4 type thing and just go, here's all the stuff we have, by the way, it's coming out like next month.
The ultimate mic drop.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, on saying that with the mic drop, I think there's going to be a lot of mic drops this year. Even though we've been getting leaks and things, but nothing's been set in stone with terms of release dates. Like, really, Far Cry 5 release date dropped last week, but they could have kept that hidden as well.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, no one's really been talking about a lot of release dates, except for, like, you know, the Red Dead Redemption delay and things like that. But I feel like everyone looked at Fallout 4, what they did 2 years ago, with just the sudden release date announcement a couple of months after E3, and they're like, yeah, actually, that's a really, really good marketing idea. We keep everything bottled up, and then we just go, and it's coming out in October, and then walk off the stage, and then everyone just loses their minds over it. So
yeah.
I think we're going to see a few of them this year, and yeah, it kind of makes sense. It has been 2 years since that, you know, announcement, like, and I think maybe, yeah, companies have gone, all right, let's just hold off until E3 and then just drop the mic then.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, what's what else? What other predictions you got?
All right, Super Smash Bros. Deluxe. Just like what they did with Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, I can see them announcing that, you know, from the 3DS and the Wii U versions, combining all the characters and the stages and that, making like one Super Deluxe version released on the Switch. It makes sense.
That'd be nice, yeah. And it would bridge that gap up to Mario as well.
Yep. I also predicting Bloodborne 2 to be announced, and I think that'll be a mic drop. I think they'll announce it and go, it will be out this year, which would be huge. Like, that's from Software. They haven't released anything this year other than the Dark Souls 3 DLC. It just kind of makes sense in terms of what's going on with everything like with that. Or it'll be early next year that they'll release the game.
But I
can see Bloodborne 2 being officially announced.
Wow.
And also, last one, and here's a way left field one, Microsoft to send out Peter Molyneux, who was the director, developer behind like Theme Park and all those, and then in more recent times, Black and White and Fable. They're going to send Peter Molyneux out on stage for a Kickstarter for a new exclusive IP on Xbox.
Nice. Okay.
That's my total left field prediction, but I could see that happening.
All right. A few more. I've got, let's say, Borderlands 3 this year.
Yep.
Because, I mean, something's got to be happening with those guys, and that...
Again, that could be another mic drop. Like, it's been rumored that the game's been in development for a while. They could wander out and go, hey, it'll be out in October this year.
And they had some really good success with the Tales of the Borderlands recently as well. So, you know, obviously people like that world and they want to go back to it.
Yep.
And I think we'll hear more. I don't know if this is so much a prediction or an expectation or a necessity, but I think we're going to hear more about Crackdown 3 from Microsoft.
Oh, well, that's their big one of their big exclusives. So yeah, they'll be showing that on Switch hardware. Yeah.
Wow. What Switch are you playing?
Wow. Yeah, Super Switch. No, it'll be on the Scorpio hardware. Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Oh, the Scorpio. Jeez. All right.
Yeah. Of course, because everything Microsoft's going to be on that, and they'll show off all their new IPs. Microsoft, you watch. It'll be Crackdown 3, State of Decay 2. That pirate thing.
I love that pause. Poor Microsoft. You're like, all their new IPs, Crackdown 3, State of Decay.
Couldn't remember the name of it.
Oh, Microsoft, let's see something this year. You need it, guys, please. Bam, all right, that's E3 predictions. For all you guys who want to keep up with E3 and watch all the presentations live, we're going to pop the timetable up on the Facebook if you jump on there and check it out. And it has all the proper Australian times and everything. So you, wherever you are, it's all converted there nice and clearly.
And for those who don't want to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to watch some of these presentations, I'll be doing express casts after I've watched the presentations, just 5 minute little news bulletins on what happened at E3 during those presentations. Really quick, just dot points on all the news that dropped through those presentations.
Oh, and that that Facebook, by the way, is just facebook.com/GameTrainPodcast.
All right, on to our first feature game this week, Rhyme.
Ah, yes. Rhyme.
So our first feature this week is Rhyme, which is an adventure puzzle game developed by Tequila Works and published by Greybox and Sixfoot. It's come out on the PS4, Xbox One, PC, and Switch.
And it is a lovely, lovely game. This, I think the graphics look just gorgeous, like your Journey and your Wind Waker kind of type things. That's always just going to look really pretty. So I was a big fan of that.
Yeah, yeah. The art style is great. So in this game, you play as this boy, and you're pretty much exploring an island, which is kind of, the game doesn't give you that much. You sort of try and work out what's happening on your own through exploring this island sort of thing. There is no voice acting in it.
Yeah, except for a few calls here and there.
Yeah, like squeaks and stuff from the boy. But yeah, it's mostly told through just what you're seeing and through music as well.
Yeah, and again, like to compare that to that real Journey vibe, which Journey, if any of you guys haven't played it, was a PlayStation 3 and now PlayStation 4 exclusive, which was just this game where you're another lonely traveler in the desert, and it was only short, about 4 to 6 hours, but it was just awesome. It was one of my favorite games of all time, I think. And yeah, just very similar thing, like you're quite lonely, but a beautiful world, beautiful music, very, very smooth.
Talking about the music was awesome. I think that's one of my favorite things from Ryan. Like the soundtrack, and this was just incredible,
wasn't it? It just gets so lost in it. I had my speakers turned up so loud for that, and it's almost nice without being interrupted by voice acting and things like that.
Oh,
like tutorials.
Yeah. Look, I'd probably say it's my favorite soundtrack in a game I've heard this year. Like that, wow. and Horizon Zero Dawn have the best two soundtracks I've heard this year in gaming.
Wow, like, really nice. Yeah, good call.
I'd probably actually pip it ahead of Horizon soundtrack.
Wow, yeah. You know, I'd have to agree with you on that one. I did find myself just kind of lost in the world, and because of that music. And there's those moments where you just kind of stop and just sort of move the camera around and look at where you are and check everything out. And those, you know, how the story's kind of told through these murals everywhere you go, things are painted and sort of cryptic kind of stories. And you just look at that, and then it kind of makes you look at the room or the mountain you're standing on. And that music really just pulls you into that moment.
It's good. It's a fun game. It's a puzzle game as well, but the puzzles aren't overly challenging.
Yeah,
I finished the game and I've gone through and nothing really stumped me. It was just like, oh yeah, I moved this here, this here. Like they've got some really cool puzzles with light and shadows and
I like that. Some fresh ideas in there.
Yeah, those were really cool. And perspective puzzles where you've got to match up certain perspectives by looking through like an area, and then you've got to sort of move the camera so it matches up perspectives to complete the puzzle, and you've got to move objects to like finish a doorway frame and things like that. It's really hard to explain without showing.
Yeah, it's kind
it
of, if you played The Witness, they had a few things like that throughout that game where you matched like tree branches with something closer to you, or a few of those perspective things, and they turn into something nearby or create a solid object. And I like that. Yeah, it's fun. It makes you look at everything sort of just that little bit different.
Yes. Like, for me, I sort of compared this game a lot to The Last Guardian, because it was a game I've played which I felt was kind of similar in a way.
Yeah.
But Rhyme just being, you know, you're just running around by yourself. You don't have this annoying bird-dog thing chilling out with you through most of the game.
Cute as he was.
And instead, you've got a fox friend that you randomly follow, but, you know, you're not having to use the fox to complete puzzles. The fox is just sort of, they're like a guide.
Yeah, he's like a spiritual guide throughout the adventure.
Yeah, exactly. One of my things that I had that I didn't like about The Last Guardian was the length. It was quite long. It was like a 15-hour game.
Yeah, and a bit repetitive.
Yeah, it didn't need to be that long. And also, in The Last Guardian, the environments were very samey.
Yeah.
While in Rhyme, Rhyme's a lot shorter. It's about 6 hours long. In saying that, I felt it could have been probably about an hour longer. I would have liked just a little more.
Yeah, well, that's better than wanting quite a lot less.
Yep. And the environment's always changing. Like, you're in, like, an island area, and then you're, like, in, like, a deserty with a bit of underwater area. Then you're in, like, a forest area. Like, it keeps the game feeling fresh, that you're always moving through new areas and there's always new things to see and discover. And it's really cool in that way. And that's another thing I really enjoyed about the game.
Yeah, I like that the pace, it feels really slow, you know, in your character movement. You're not, like, this super fast, but because of those areas always changing and puzzles being like quite contained puzzles, and they're like there's this fine line between challenge but very simple, and once you get used to the thing, it kind of, even though the pace feels very slow, the game seems to move at quite a nice pace, like it's nice and quick in that way.
Yes. Yeah, like, yeah, it just feels like, yeah, they just sort of, you're constantly moving through new areas, like you're on an island, you're in a tower, you're suddenly in a desert area.
Yeah, and that discovery feeling is really prominent.
Yeah, even though it's all set, you know, on the one island, it actually does feel a little separate from each other.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the way the game was designed.
Oh, and I was going to say, what I really like about the actual game, you were saying this earlier, that there's not a lot of people talking you through things or explaining the adventure. I feel like it's very like that very first Super Mario Brothers, where they teach you how to do things by making it obvious. Like, you know, in Mario, when you first ever play that very first one, you appear there and you can't go left and there's stuff on the right. So you're like, all right, I got to walk to the right. And then there's like one question mark box, you hit it and a mushroom comes out and it makes you grow. And you're like, oh, that's a thing that happens. And like, it kind of felt like that, where they point you in these subtle directions and they, you know, I don't know, I'd really like that. And you kind of just organically learn how everything works.
Unlike a 20-hour tutorial in Persona 5.
I mean, the game needed it, but 20 hours. Oh, man.
You could play through Rhyme 3 times and still be in Persona 5
and still be learning how to play Persona 5, yeah. Wow. It wasn't all rosy. There was a few things that were kind of bugged me. One was that running speed, and I get it, because it was like, it helped it be, you know, quite fluid and smooth, especially with that beautiful frame rate. But I wish I could just sprint, even if it was just for like a second, and there was stamina if you know, if they wanted to shorten it. But I wish I could have just moved between a few areas just a little quicker. It did start to make sense, though. There's some mysteries that happen throughout the game, like little subtle appearances of certain things, and they disappear as you get closer to them. And I think the exact speed that you're running really helps with that. But there was also the climbing. There was a lot of rocks and mountains that you could climb and some that you couldn't. And it wasn't really strict, like you can only climb on the white bits, like a game like Tomb Raider or something. There was also like certain ledges that you could just climb just because they're high enough. But it wasn't always clear which was which. So I spent a bit of time trying to climb things I couldn't. And sometimes doing it for a while, and then suddenly I could climb it. And I'm like, oh, this is a thing I can climb. And so because of that, I'd try even longer at other things and go like, oh no, I can't actually get here. It never really bothered me too much, because it was obviously never parts that you needed to go, but it was just for things like getting, you know, sort of wider views, or just discovering or trying to find like collectibles. And so there was that. That was the probably main thing that irked me about the game.
What was your score out of 10?
As far as all those things and the length and just how they sort of swap and change the adventure, and it really, the discovery is beautiful. I think I give this game 8.5 carriages.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I gave it 8 carriages out of 10.
Nice, nice. All right, there it is. Rhyme, ladies and gentlemen. Jump on.
There it is. Rhyme. Get on board. It's a great game. It's short, but it's good. You should go check it out. All right. Injustice 2.
Yeah, game number 2, Injustice 2.
I am Brainiac. I collect worlds.
How do I beat him? You can't.
Okay, so Injustice 2, developed by NetherRealm Studios and published by Warner Bros. Interactive Entertainment, is a fighting game with all your favorite DC characters.
Most of your favorite DC characters.
So it's a fighting game just like Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat style, but with DC characters. So you got like Batman, Superman, Aquaman, Harley Quinn, the Joker, Bane, Darkseid, The Flash, Firestorm, Wonder Woman, Supergirl.
Also, if you played Injustice 1, sorry about all that stuff Callan just said, because it's that again. Yeah, I loved it. I'm a big fan of Mortal Kombat and a fan of fighting games in general, and I love that they're kind of coming back ever since Street Fighter 4 a couple of years ago. It kind of just revived the gaming world with fighting games again. I have missed them, and I do enjoy them. So, and this is a really good one. And
you loved Firestorm too.
Mate, I don't want to ever talk about Firestorm and his big ring of fire and his attitude. That boy needs to reel it in. Okay. Him and his Blue Beetle friend. I don't know who they are. I'm no DC fan. Sorry to the DC fans who follow their extensive comic book career, but I have never heard of these people. I don't know
what Firestorm, best character in the game. By far.
No way. Yep. Firestorm is just a stain. But anyway, that aside, Harley Quinn for life. I really enjoyed it. It felt just like Mortal Kombat 9 and X.
It did, actually, because I hadn't played Mortal Kombat X, and I played Injustice 2, and then I went out and got Mortal Kombat X because I was sort of like, oh, yeah, I want to kind of get back into Mortal Kombat again. Played it, I'm like, wow, it feels like the same game. Like, so even, like, down to, like, using super moves are the same buttons in Mortal Kombat as they are in Injustice 2.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's almost like a different skin, you know. It is the same studio, same engine, same everything, but, I mean... So, I guess they weren't really hiding the fact that it was going to be similar.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a new skin with your favorite DC characters and, a fun story, which fighting games don't often do, but these guys are very good at it.
Yeah, it had a cool story. Like, it follows on from the first one. Like, in the first game, it's sort of set in this sort of other universe, really. Like, Superman accidentally kills Lois by... What was he, like, gets gassed by the Joker... And goes crazy and kills Lois by accident.
Yeah, with pregnant with their child as well.
Yes. And so after he realizes that, Superman loses the plot and pretty much just decides, all right, it's okay to kill people now.
Yeah, he has that iconic scene where he rips his hand through the Joker's chest and pulls out his heart, which is something fans never thought they'd see Superman do. So that was really cool.
And then Batman... doesn't agree with this at all, and then heroes take sides.
It's Civil War for DC.
Yeah, pretty much. So Injustice 2 follows on that. Like, at the end of Injustice 1, spoiler alert, Superman loses and gets imprisoned. Spoiler over. In Injustice 2, Brainiac is invading Earth this time. And Brainiac's really powerful. And so in order to stop Brainiac, they have to release Superman as well because they need his help. Goes on from there.
So on and so forth. The main thing that they've added on this one from the first Injustice was the extensive upgrades that you can add to every character, whether they're visual or they add things to your, like, strength or different moves. There's so much upgrades, and I'm a fan of outfits and upgrades, but even this was like quite overwhelming.
There's a bit too much.
Yeah, I mean,
like, it was very RPG like you know, you can get a new cowl for Batman, or you can get new utility belts for Batman or things like that, and you know, they're up certain stats, but it didn't feel like they were doing enough with, like, the stat upgrade sort of thing. Like, it didn't feel that much different.
Yeah, it was a fine line because, I mean, it's a fighting game, and the point of fighting games is to master the character. And if your character's a bit stronger than someone else's, then, you know, that really shifts the balance. And part of, like, the thing that makes games like Street Fighter 2 just, like, these amazing classics is that they have that beautiful... perfect balance between characters and counter characters, and as soon as you just change a little bit, like their speed and their strength, it just kind of changes everything, I feel like. So even though there's modes that let you, you know, like go online and not use any of the upgrades or only specific ones that can, or you can use it in the one player game, it still kind of undermines that classic act of, you know, like a lot of fighting game fans, they'll pick one or two characters to main and then they just learn the shit out of their movesets and the timing and yeah, that.
Well, you get most of your gear in this through loot boxes that you get from completing certain tasks or whatever.
Yep.
And the thing I didn't like about it is that, let's say, okay, you really liked Harley Quinn, right? She was like your main fighter. For me, it was like sort of Firestorm. was my main character, best character in the game. Poor Callum. You know, you want to all because you couldn't beat Firestorm in a fight.
Duh. Excuse me, you want to see? We're going to post up our first fight, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. Okay. In saying on this first fight, he said he's played through Mortal Kombat 9 and Mortal Kombat X, which is pretty much the same game as this in terms of fighting style. I hadn't. He's like, oh yeah, I haven't played Injustice 2 before. Anyway, we jump in and he kicks my ass.
How do I beat him? You can't.
And then I realize I'm like, fuck, I'm terrible at this. I learn how to play the game. I start beating him. I put in Mortal Kombat and go, oh, well, that's why he already could kick my ass, because he already knew how the game played.
All right, we're going to clear this up, guys. We're going to put up our first fight ever. And then after we record this, we're going to put up our last fight post-podcast after we have this chat.
Wait. Are you saying we're fighting again after this podcast?
Yeah, or as soon as you get back from wherever you need to be, we need a rematch so we can have our very first fight. And now with all the lessons you've learned, we'll have one more fight and we'll post that up as well. So we'll see how we've come along. No edits, just the very next time we fight. This is a challenge right here, live on podcast.
Still, I'm standing by that you had prior knowledge. Anyway,
I did.
So you get your gear from loot boxes now, and it's random loot every time. And the thing that really, really got annoying for me is that it's like, oh yeah, you know, I want to gear up Firestorm, right? Best character in the game. Mm-hmm.
Let's move on.
Anyway, so you get loot boxes, and it's like, oh, cool, I got a Green Arrow hat. Oh, okay, I got Green Lantern legs. Oh, cool, I got Harley Quinn guns.
Yep.
So you get your next box. Oh, I got a Batman hat. Oh, I got a Superman chest. Where's my Firestorm gear?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess that's how loot boxes work. It's very Overwatchy.
But then at the same time, it was just frustrating that you get all these loot boxes and then you're not getting anything for the characters that you want to play in the game.
Well, I mean, although that's fair enough with the loot boxes, but I was pretty impressed with the way that if you're using a certain character, especially in the one-player game where you're climbing those ladders, you still unlock sort of random outfits, but you get a little bit more for that specific character. Like,
oh, you know, the game gives you like an item or two here and there, like as you're playing through like some of the modes online. But I mean, like through the loot boxes, there should be a way that you set like a favorite character and you got more of a chance of stuff rolling out, because there are a lot of characters and it's not like in Overwatch where it's just costumes or whatever. Like, as we were talking about before, there are stat increases and you have to get stats to a certain level to be able to do some of the challenges in the game as well. And it's just frustrating. It's like, oh, I can't do that challenge because my defense isn't over 1,000.
Yeah.
Because I haven't gotten enough gear to be able to equip it all, because it keeps giving me Harley Quinn hats.
Yeah. I mean, I give it to them for trying to do something different in the fighting world, and that's fair enough. But it's such a fine line because their formula is already so great.
Mm.
And I wish they would just concentrate on just solidifying what they already have. But then again, people don't want to see the same stuff done over and over. It's just, I'm such a big fan of their setups already. I didn't need them to go so far out with all these things. And
a cool thing that they did, though, you know, get off the loot bandwagon, is the multiverse online. That's fun.
Yeah. I love that.
You can go jump into this thing called Multiverse, which is just all these different challenges online, and it pretty much just puts you up against a bunch of random fighters in a row, computer controlled. But there's like different challenges involved. It's like, all right, you know, use 10 super moves in this multiverse to get bonuses, or use, you know, it puts like restrictions on the battle. Like there's a Riddler one where these question marks come floating in, and every time you get a question mark, it may heal you, it may damage you, it may push you back. It does all these random things like this and sort of spices up the game a little, and then you can progress through the multiverse and complete these challenges, and then you can do it, you can join a guild and you can complete multiverse challenges as a guild to earn points and gear and things like that.
Yeah, I like that too. Big fan.
And there are leaderboards, and I beat Carl on the guild's leaderboard, and it was great. My name was Buffy.
I don't
his.
Know. I got kicked out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You got kicked out of the guild for inactivity. But yeah, I think the multiverse stuff was really cool. It adds a bit of longevity to the game, things to keep doing and coming back to.
Yeah, that's true.
Because every day there's new multiverse planets to go to and different goals to achieve.
Yeah, and it makes it feel fresh. You're not just sort of fighting one player after the next over and over and over. Like, they add little elements for you to concentrate on, and yep. It is fun.
So what do you give it?
As a sequel, I give this an 8. If there was no Injustice 1 or even the other Mortal Kombat, and this was the first thing I'd played in a long time, I probably would have given it a 9. It was really cool, and the extra sort of bits and pieces they added were a lot of fun, but it was a bit samey. The story even was still a bit samey. I wish they kind of maybe swapped who was the bad guy and things like that. But yeah, I mean, I still give it 8 carriages. I had a lot of fun with it.
For me, yeah, one of my favorite things in this game was the animation quality. The animations were beautiful.
Oh, like, weren't they? Mass Effect. Oh,
wow, yeah, hello. That looked amazing. And the graphics and the smoothness and all that was cool. It was fun, you know, doing a fighting game with like Batman, Superman, stuff like that. I give it an 8 as well. 8 out of 10 carriages.
Next, mere mortals cannot stop. How do I beat him? You can't.
Nice. All right, that's our big games this time. We're going to jump straight into games of our lives.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the games of our lives.
Yes, that's right. Games of our lives are going from 2005 through to 2010 this week.
Let's do it. Okay.
Okay, all right.
2005.
Yes. For me, Resident Evil 4.
Yep, nice. One of the greatest games of all time. For me, it was Fear.
Oh, yeah, that game was cool. The girl was creepy. I never finished it, though.
Oh, it scared the shit out of me. And it was one of the first, like, good graphics games I could run on a new computer I got. So I was, you know, I felt pretty cool.
Cool. 2006.
Oblivion.
I went Kingdom Hearts 2.
Oh, yep, fair. That's all right.
2007, Guitar Hero 3 / Rock Band. Now, these games are pretty much the same sort of game. They came out in the same year, these two. Yeah. I was playing them both so much. Rock Band probably pips it just because it introduced the drum kit.
Oh, yep, true. For me, it was Portal. That game was just amazing.
Yep. Portal 2 was awesome as well with the co-op and stuff, and that was cool.
2008...
Yes, okay. World of Warcraft, Wrath of the Lich King.
Okay. Right. That's...
No, in saying that, okay, I know I spoke a lot about Warcraft last time, but this was my favorite expansion. This was the pinnacle of World of Warcraft, and a lot of fans agreed. This was when it hit its absolute peak. This is when they hit their highest subscription numbers. It had a really cool story, really cool setting through this expansion. It wrapped up a lot of ties that had been, story threads that had been started back in Warcraft 3. Very, very cool expansion. Very cool.
I'm sorry, we're still talking about World of Warcraft. I fell asleep hardcore.
Okay, all right.
I'm back.
Wait until we have to feature the next Warcraft expansion as our feature game. Have fun with that.
I will. The old FUN. Mine was Mirror's Edge. I was really blown away by that perspective in that kind of Prince of Persia-y style gameplay. I hadn't tried anything like it before, and the visuals were really different for me, and the music was really awesome.
Cool. 2009.
Assassin's Creed 2.
Oh, yeah. I also had Assassin's Creed 2.
Oh, really? Oh, God. What a game. It just blew me away.
It was so good.
So good.
You know, I love the setting in that game, the Italian setting. What was amazing is that years later, I went back... I traveled to some of these cities, and, like, the bridge in Florence, like, was, like, bang on. Like, I looked at it, and I'm like, I've been here in Assassin's Creed 2
before. I have climbed
like,
that thing.
It was so... Like, man, that game was awesome. Like, Ezio was a really cool character.
Yeah,
he had swagger, but he still had like a struggle behind his story.
Oh man, those three games and watching him grow and mature.
Yep.
What a genius concept.
They built on everything. They took the foundations from Assassin's Creed 1 and built on everything. And that's what you want from a sequel.
Oh, that was such a good sequel. Yeah, absolutely.
All right, 2010.
What'd you get?
Easy. This is easy one, this one.
Yeah.
StarCraft 2.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was a long time coming for the old StarCraft fans.
Yes.
Even I bought that, and I don't play those style of games.
Yep. There was much hype around that game. It was in development for a long time. Really, really cool game.
My one, and it ties into our next section quite nicely, was Red Dead Redemption.
Yep. For me, the reason why StarCraft 2 pips Red Dead Redemption is just for the amount of time I put into StarCraft 2 online and really enjoyed that, playing that with friends a lot. And it just pips Red Dead just for that reason.
Ah, true. Well, Red Dead, that I was invested in that story more than I've been in a game in just the longest time. It's easily one of my top five games of all time and probably the best game ending that I've ever experienced.
Which leads us into question time.
Yes, so that was Games of Our Lives, guys. Listener questions. We've got a few this week. Go us.
All right, okay, so kicking off the first question, again, Brendan Hawkins returns for another question.
Hey, Brendan.
He says, with Red Dead Redemption 2 being delayed, in brackets, oh no, would you indulge us impatient fans with a brief recap of why the first edition was so utterly awesome and what you thought of the slightly controversial ending?
Bam. Oh, man. Good question. A quick recap of why the first one was so utterly awesome. I don't think that's possible.
Yeah, it is. It was Grand Theft Auto and the Wild West.
Yeah, but it was so much more than that. It was like John Marston was just such an amazing character, and seeing him grow. And this, the story was like where GTA is like this sort of, you know, dark humor, and a lot of it is based on sort of, you know, taking a piss of American culture and a lot of jokes, and like there's sort of a serious story kind of far in the background. Red Dead Redemption swapped it and made it the other way. There's like there's humor and there's lighthearted stuff, but the story is just so much more somber and serious, and it was just so fresh for me to see that from Rockstar and really get into someone and know that like everything I'm doing is not just this big old joke that's going to turn around with a punchline or something. Like, there was some real serious stakes, and I really fell in love with the characters and, you know, like, John's family. And the world was just, when I first heard about it, I was excited, but I thought, wow, a huge, empty, desert, barren land of GTA. Like, whoopee, what on earth will you be able to do? But I was never bored.
Oh, like hunting the animals, that was fun.
Oh, yeah, hunting was great.
Or you'd be walking along and you hear, whew, and you're like, what? And then cougar just jumps out and one hits you.
Death. Immediate death.
Another thing I loved about the game was the lasso. Like, it was just a cool freaking weapon. You could lasso someone, jump on your horse and drag them behind you, and then leave them tied up on the train tracks.
I wish they added that as DLC to GTA 5 Online. And just tie it behind a car, and just it would just be brutal. It'd be a lot of. I did really enjoy that because you could use it on horses or people. It was very fun.
I thought the ending was awesome. Spoilers here for anyone that has not played the game.
Well, big spoilers. I don't know. I don't even feel like I want to spoil this because
I don't want to spoil it either. I thought it was brave, but it was so well done how they did it. And I wish more game companies would go out on a limb and do similar things what they did in Red Dead Redemption with that ending.
Yeah, okay. For those who haven't played it yet, you have 10 seconds to pick up your phone or whatever it is you're listening to this on and pause it or skip, because we're about to spoil it. And I don't want to spoil this for people who haven't tried it. It is truly worth it. Stop listening right now and fast forward like a minute or two. All right, there. It's all clear. Everybody's gone. So you play the game. You spend hundreds of hours, and then right at the very end, your character that you've been playing tries to defend his family, and all these government officials that have been running you down and promising you things like the safety of your family after you've completed this giant mission throughout the game, the whole big arc, they all gang up and shoot you in this epic moment where they even give you the chance to kill them all, where it all slows down and you can lock on to everyone and you really think you can. And everyone I've spoken to says that they were like, yeah, this is going to be epic. And you lock everyone down and you aim for their heads. And then you just don't do it in time. And they just lay into you with bullets. And you fall onto your knees. And it switches to your wife and your son trying to escape. And they stop for a moment after hearing all the gunshots. And then they keep running. And it switches back to you. And you just fall over and die. And then it fades away into the dark. And then it comes back into light on a rainy day, and it shows your tombstone with your name on it, and it zooms out and you're there looking at the tombstone, and you're confused for a bit, like, how is this possible? And the camera pans around, and it's your son grown up years later, dressed up like you, and then you play for like another hour and get revenge on everyone that killed you as your son. Oh my god! Wow!
Why don't more games do things like that, like kill off your main character and stuff like that? It's just... They play it so safe with games, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Take some risks, man. This was amazing.
It's the same with movies. Like, movies just do it too safe as well, I feel.
Yeah, yep. Absolutely.
Like, people like that, like, sort of thing, you know, where it's like, oh, okay, wow, that's different.
It's memorable. Like, it stays with... I remember that ending nearly frame for frame in my head, years after, and I've played like so many games since.
Do you remember the ending of Grand Theft Auto 5?
I do not.
Neither do I.
They looked at a car or something, or
I
played that twice, yeah. But nothing. I don't think there's any endings for me that have topped Red Dead Redemption. It made the whole game, you know. And I mean, if you want to talk about why this game is so utterly awesome, and then the DLC came out, which transformed the entire game into a zombie game. And you could find Bigfoot and a unicorn, like, holy shit, this game is good. I'm so excited for part two. All right, we got to move on.
Okay.
Next question.
Yes.
Came from Reef Atkin. Hey, Reef. Thank you for this. And he says, what game has made you straight up cry during playing it? Myself, Final Fantasy VII, spoiler alert.
Again, close your ears if you haven't played Final Fantasy VII and don't know the spoiler.
And he said, one of them, was Aeris dying at the hands of Sephiroth. So I've given it a bit of thought, and that's a tough one.
Well, I admit during that scene, I got sad, eyes a little watery. I didn't, like, waterworks everywhere. But, like, it wasn't, you know, for me in that scene, it wasn't the actual bit when Sephiroth stabs Aeris. It was how it just goes silent, she falls, and then that bit of materia drops, and then it hits the ground, and then her theme music kicks in, which is one of my all-time favorite tracks from a video game. And that was the spine-tingling bit right there.
Yeah.
Just that little piano starts, the piano intro to it, and yeah, like, again, that was a big twist as well. You know, you play 40 hours with this character in your party, and then she gets killed.
Yeah, and see, and we're still talking about it like 20-odd years later. So games, take note. Take some risks.
Yeah.
Make some memorable moments.
That's probably one of the saddest bits in video games.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it's... There has been quite a few. I can't really think of any. And I did try to... I get really emotionally invested in a lot of games that I play. But I reckon that ending I was just talking about with Red Dead Redemption, the moment it switches to his family looking back, that's quite a little heart-wrenching moment there.
Final Fantasy X was quite sad.
Yeah, it was. All right, let's move on. Thank you for the questions, guys. And please, if you want to send us any more, facebook.com/GameTrainPodcast. Just message us and ask us whatever you want.
All right, into the lame train and the hype train. First up, lame train, go.
Red Dead delayed.
Yes, same. Exactly the same. I said game delays in general.
Yeah.
Hate it. It's like, you're getting so excited. You're like, oh, well, it's like 3 months. This is going to be cool. They're going to be dropping all new trailers soon. Delayed till next year.
Aww. Exactly. It's like the opposite of, like, you know, under promise, over deliver, which is what you want to do. But,
Yep.
Oh, same. All right. Hype train.
Hype train.
For me, it's E3.
Same here. Wow, look at us.
All about the E3. This is the biggest hype time of the year. It's fucking trains going in every direction, just hype blowing out the freaking tops. It's just out of control time.
Oh, man. So I find, like, this episode, our lame train and hype train are completely the same, which is awesome. But
normally quite different.
Yeah, and I reckon next time it's going to be so hard to choose, because after E3, our hype trains or lame trains are just going to be packed, I reckon.
Exactly. Well, pretty much, leaving this episode now, is that our next episode, we aren't doing a feature game. Our next episode is all about E3. It's all the news, everything from EVE 3. That's going to be all our hype and lame trains. Everything is going to be EVE 3 next episode.
Yes, and our opinions and our thoughts and what we reckon and
what's going on. It's going to be huge, jam packed. It's pretty much going to be either a giant hype train the whole way through, or it's going to be an absolute freaking catastrophe if it's just the worst EVE 3 ever and we just hate on everything for 30, 40 minutes.
Fingers crossed, Xbox. Come on, guys. Pick it up this year.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening once again.
Cheers, guys.
Stay tuned for the EVE 3 Express trains coming when EVE 3 is on, and which are going to be our 5-minute sort of, well, my 5-minute sort of newscast straight after presentations. And then, of course, our big EVE 3 episode, which will be a wrap-up of everything EVE 3, where we discuss and dissect everything that's happened at EVE 3. And for those people who love movies, go listen to Fish and Connor Saw a Movie podcast. These guys go see the latest movies each week and give their analysis on the movie. It's actually quite good, quite funny.
Nice, nice.
Dave and Connor, or Fish and Connor, do a great job on, giving a good rundown on all movies. It's quite funny and quite in-depth reviews on everything.
Nice.
So, yeah, if you love movies, go check it out. The website is facebook.com/fishandconnor. And I'll also put up a link to it later this week. Thank you so much for listening.
Bam, guys. Thank you very much. That's Game Train, Episode 7. See you next time.